This podcast is made possible through listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. And the Florence County Museum, presenting Edward Gay, an American landscape painter, chronicling Gay's evolving style amid the turn of the 20th century and his unique connections to South Carolina and the National Academy of Design, now through February 23rd, flocomuseum.org. And Meadow Garden, home of George Walton, one of the youngest signers of the Declaration of Independence. Open for tours Monday through Friday, 10 to 4. Learn more at historicmeadowgarden.org and visit augusta.com.
From South Carolina Public Radio, this is Walter Edgar's Journal. I'm Walter Edgar, welcoming you to our podcast series about South Carolina culture and history, with a nod to all things Southern. Today, Alfred Turner and I will be talking with Jonathan Stolman and Martha Severance about their book, Southern Modern, Rediscovering Southern Art from the First Half of the 20th Century.
Jonathan Stolman is Senior Curator of American Art at the Mint Museum in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Martha Severance is an independent scholar based in the upstate of South Carolina. Together, they have created a book that is so much more than just a catalog for the exhibit.
Featuring 12 essays, this lavishly illustrated volume includes all the works from the exhibition and more. It assesses a broader body of contextual pieces to offer a fascinating, multi-pronged look at modernism's thriving presence in the South, until now, something largely overlooked in histories of American art. Martha and Jonathan, welcome to the Journal. This book that you all have produced, Southern Modern, Rediscovering Southern Art from the First Half of the 20th Century. It goes along with the exhibition at the Mint Museum, but it's not a catalog. It's much more. How about talking about that for a few minutes?
I think it means that it has a long shelf life, that it is not just during the duration of the exhibition. There also are a series of 12 essays, which are far more comprehensive than any exhibition can be. The essay, for instance, on lynching is much more provocative. The essay about sound, that was a very different approach that was taken there by Leo. And the book is also beautifully illustrated. It has more illustrations than just the ones that are in the exhibition. And I think our hats are off, right, Jonathan, to the University of North Carolina Press, who did a beautiful job in laying it out and understanding our vision.
They did. And I think, you know, the authors that we invited to write the essays, we really tried to pick a wide range of contributors and really allow them to look at the checklist for the show. They're all, you know, well-versed in the art of the region and the period. And really kind of take what piqued their interest or what aligned with their backgrounds and let them kind of use the works in the show as a way to dig into their topics a bit. I mean, we could have gone to 12 different authors and gotten 12 very different essays. And that's, you know, kind of, as Martha said, we want this catalog to have a long shelf life. And part of the hope of the project is that it takes this overlooked, often overlooked work and, stimulates more scholarship down the road.
Well, looking at South Carolina and your introduction, Jonathan, you quote Joseph Downs, who was then at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And in 1949, he said, "Little of artistic merit was made south of Baltimore." And of course, including Baltimore, I thought, all right, here is the H.L. Mencken of the art world. Nothing happened down south. Now, in South Carolina in the 1920s, the Charleston Renaissance, Martha, as you know, was in many ways a visceral and artistic reaction to Mencken's criticism. And we often in South Carolina focus on the literary world. We don't look at the artistic world that much because a lot of the art that was produced, whether it was Huddy or Verner, what have you, was rather romantic and sweet, and it was all aimed at the tourist trade.
I think that's a bit of an overstatement, Walter. I don't think it was all aimed at the tourist trade. It was certainly instrumental in fueling the tourist trade, and because tourists bought things and took them home to Chicago, to New York, to New Hampshire, wherever, it brought attention to the South. They were not the only ones. We've included in the exhibition Thomas Hart Benton, who's often associated with Missouri, but he did a sweep through the South, created a body of work, created lithographs, and like the Charles the Renaissance artist, because they were prints, they were inexpensive, they could be distributed easily, put in the mail, that kind of thing. So the Charles the Renaissance was not the only phenomena or group of people contributing to a new view of the South. And I think one other view, and Jonathan advocated this from the very beginning, was the whole idea of the New South and the industry that was growing up, like the images of the steel mills and also the textile industry. Do you want to speak to that, John?
Sure. I mean, I think with Charleston in particular, you know, you touched on, you know, how Huddy and others were kind of creating this somewhat romanticized image of life in Charleston and by extension the South. And one thing that Martha and I, when we worked on the show, we kind of wanted to move beyond. I think if people did think of art in the South in particular, I mean, the South is fairly well known during the first half of the 20th century for music like jazz and the blues coming out of it, for literature coming out of it, but the visual arts are much, unless you're kind of here and seeing them at local and regional museums, much less well represented on the kind of national level. And so Martha and I kind of made a conscious decision to start the show not really at 1900, but really kind of 1915, 1914, post Armory show. So really looking at this notion, kind of cutting against the notion that artists of the South were stuck in the past and just kind of rehashing Impressionism or romanticizing the South. But, you know, in fact, there was all kinds of other things going on. And the South during this time, as Martha said, was changing and growing. So, you know, there are images of steel mills and sawmills and all different other kinds of industry. And some images of that kind of, you know, romantic landscape of crops being harvested, but also images of kind of environmental devastation from crops being harvested. So we really wanted to kind of take an inclusive view and look at the ways in which the wide variety of ways in which the South was depicted, both in terms of subjects, but also stylistically as well.
I have to ask a question about something I saw on the website of the Mint Museum, talking about the show for which this book is, obviously a good companion, but also so much more. They talk about this exhibit as being the first exhibition to present a comprehensive survey of works by artists working in the American South for the first half of the 20th century. I was surprised by that. Really? The first one? I mean, congratulations, first of all, but do you think that this was something that, I don't want to say the South was ignored on purpose. Was there perhaps just an idea that it really was all pictures of bird dogs going after ducks in the field or people harvesting or what?
Alfred, it's not just impending. There's a lot of arrogance and ignorance involved.
Well, see, I was going to let the historian or the art expert say that, not me. But that's kind of what I'm asking, I guess.
I think what you're missing, Alfred, is that this is a comprehensive project. Comprehensive in terms of the region. Mm-hmm. It's not just one state. It's comprehensive in terms of the representation of the artist, the great variety of styles and personalities and viewpoints. We have admittedly limited the work to two-dimensional work. We labored at first over whether or not to include photography. We also labored whether or not we should include sculpture. Sculpture got dismissed pretty quickly, but photography was there for a little longer. I think the other issue is many of these artists have had monographic studies, and there are several museums now in the region, such as the Ogden Museum in New Orleans, the Morris Museum in Augusta, the Greenville County Museum of Art, that particularly specialize in the art of the South. But they have their collection catalogs and their exhibition catalogs, but they don't look at the big comprehensive picture that we tried to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, the question kind of gets back to the genesis or the origins of the show. And there are, I note in my introduction to the catalog, you know, there are a few specific projects upon whose shoulders our project stands. There were two historic overviews of art in the South that look comprehensively from, you know, 17th century up until the dates of the shows, one at the Corcoran Museum in the 60s and another, really the major turning point was the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts show, Painting in the South in the early 1980s. The Georgia Museum of Art did a kind of a comprehensive survey of American scene painting, which is a kind of subcategory of Southern art of the 30s and 40s, I think in the late 90s or early 2000s. But really, for this exhibition derived out of my own ignorance of Southern art as an American art historian and someone coming to the Mint almost 20 years ago now and, you know, starting to dig into our collection here and someone starting to get to know other curators, other collections in the region, and kind of just being consistently surprised at all of the artists I was discovering, all of the quality of the work I was seeing. And, you know, my own area of interest is kind of that first half of the 20th century in American modernism. And I thought, why don't I know about this? Why is this not part of the dialogue of American art history? So that was kind of the genesis of the project.
You include artists from the South and you kind of get a little bit outside the bounds of the traditional definition of the South to bring in some folks from we call the upper Midwest. But defining a Southern artist, and this is a conversation, Martha, I had with historians even back before the time of the encyclopedia. One of Jasper John's first patrons was Robert Oakes, who many years was with the Columbia Museum of Art. He was also chairman of the history department. And he said he didn't consider Johns a Southern artist. And I said, well, he was born in Georgia and reared in South Carolina. And he said, yes, but he doesn't paint Southern.
Okay.
So
that was, you know, what, as Martha was talking about some of the kind of criteria that we came up with, most of the artists that are included in the exhibition were either born in the South or spent a significant portion of their careers in the South or and focused on Southern subject matter. We did include a number of artists like Benton who were not from the region, didn't really live in the region, but who came here and created substantial bodies of work during their time here. So Benton or Jacob Lawrence, for example, is another. And then we did include artists like Romar Bearden, who is being here in Charlotte where I am at the Mint Museum. Bearden's a Charlotte native, but he left the South when he was about 3 years old and spent most of his career in New York. We did include him in the show because so much of his work from the 40s onward reflected back upon his Southern experience. It was kind of part of his artistic DNA, a big part of his subject matter. And the example that I use of an artist that we didn't include who was born in the South was Buford Delaney. He left Kentucky, went to Boston, went to New York, went to Paris, and never really focused back on the South for a subject matter. So that was kind of some of the ways in which we kind of shaped the content of the show. Just being born in the South kind of wasn't enough. You really had to have either had an impact here or had your work really focus on some aspect of the region to be included.
We made some tough decisions. I mean, and John and I, and there were others at the table. In January of 2013, John convened a group of, 25 curators, collectors, museum folks, scholars, and we hashed out both the question of what is Southern, what were the date parameters. I mentioned earlier what kind of media should be included. This question of Southern has, I think, been plaguing us who are involved in its culture. I think, as the eminent art historian William Gertz said, it's better to be inclusive than exclusive because it just makes for a richer dialogue.
Well, Martha, you had good experience because you sat around the table at the turn of the century when we decided who and who would not be a South Carolinian or a South Carolina topic to be included in the encyclopedia.
Right.
John, I promised Martha I would not focus too much on South Carolina, but I do want to mention one South Carolina artist that is in the exhibit. Mm-hmm. Actually, there are two, but I especially want to talk about William H. Johnson, mm-hmm. important African-American artist, rather tragic life. Describe Johnson's art, because his style and subject matter changed over time.
Well, I often talk about him, or I did when I would do gallery talks at the Greenville County Museum of Art, which has an outstanding collection of Johnson's work, that it took him a while to find his artistic voice. And he started out disadvantaged in Florence, South Carolina, and one of his artistic sources, or things that he saw a lot of, were the cartoon pages that came out of the newspapers at the Florence Railroad Depot. He was lucky enough to get on one of those trains headed north to New York City. He worked in various odd jobs and landed at a distinguished art school, the National Academy of Design, was befriended by important figures in the art world. He was passed over for a traveling scholarship that would have allowed him to go abroad because of his race. But his mentor, Charles Hawthorne, saw to it that there was money that allowed him to go to Paris initially, which he did. And it's his experience abroad. He falls under the spell of a handful of artists, all tending to be expressionist. He fell in love with a Danish woman. They moved to Kerteminde in Denmark. She was a textile designer. But then with the rise of Nazism, they came to New York, and I think that's where he found his artistic voice. He embraced Afrocentric imagery. He embraced the world of Harlem, where he was teaching. A lot of his work is retrospective of his life growing up in Florence, the wonderful paintings of sharecroppers and farmers and children, very colorful. You'll notice if you look at a body of work, and there's lots of it at the Smithsonian American Art Museum, that he had a habit of patterns, stripes. I look at that as the influence of his wife, Holka Krake, who was a textile designer. Mm-hmm. So that's where he found his artistic voice. So in the exhibition, we have an example of a work from his European phase, and then that marvelous painting from the Florence County Museum mm-hmm. of his later phase.
I think what Martha was talking about really speaks to the experience that a lot of these artists had, which was the fact that many, many of the artists in the exhibition sought training outside of the South, whether it was Philadelphia or New York or Chicago, and often even onto Europe, because at the time there just weren't a lot of, especially early in the period of their show, there weren't a lot of opportunities for training as an artist in the region. It's really during the period that the show covers that we start to see the rise of, in particular, college and university programs, art programs, and both at traditional colleges and HBCUs. And we also start to see the development of various artistic groups like the Southern States Art League, or places like Black Mountain, or other artistic colonies where artists could gather. All of that was really happening during the period covered by the show, which I think is, part of what made for such a kind of a rich environment in the South during this time.
Well, in your title of the book, you talk about rediscovering Southern art, but I think you're going to find that for many readers and for those who go to the exhibition, it's really going to be a first-time discovery.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. And
of course, it's interesting that you focused twice now, I think, Walter, on the subtitle. That was something that UNC Press really wanted. For years, John and I were just talking about so/mo. We thought it was self-evident, but the press wanted something. And I think in the end, John devised the subtitle.
Well, but I do think it does get to the point that, Martha was saying, we intend the book to be for more of a general reader, to have, there are about 100 works of art in the exhibition. There are about 200 illustrated in the book. So we really wanted it to be a resource for, I guess we could, maybe if there's a second edition, we can just call it Discovering instead of Rediscovering. That was part of the point, was we really wanted people to be able to dig in and see new things and, or to think about artists like Thomas Hart Benton or Romar Bearden kind of in a new context.
I must say that in wanting people to dig in, you have succeeded. This is a book that anyone could pick up and enjoy, and I mean enjoy. I was fascinated not just with the illustrations, but with the text, and it's written so that Alfred could understand it.
Well, thanks. but I take your point. Not having any more information in my head about Southern art than what I might have picked up in college, there are a lot of discoveries in this book for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, don't forget the exhibition. I'm hoping the podcast will come out when the exhibition is on the walls at the Mint.
It will.
And also, I want to plug in for the fact that there is a supplemental exhibition that will take place in Spartanburg, which for South Carolinians may not be as far away. This will be at the gallery on Main Street that is organized and a facility of the Johnson Collection. The Johnson Collection has been instrumental in terms of lending loans. There are 17 pieces in the Mint version of the exhibition, and in Spartanburg, there'll be another 23 artists. In Spartanburg, we're using different works by 23 of the artists in Charlotte, and the exhibitions will run sort of simultaneously.
Yeah, and Martha brings up a great point. An exhibition like this is drawn from more than 50 different public and private collections, and the Johnson Collection in Spartanburg was, by a decent amount, the biggest lender to the show. And part of the point of the project is to also highlight the richness of Southern museums and collections. And the Johnson Collection, I mean, ever since I've been in Charlotte, I've known of them and kind of watched with admiration as they've really taken their extremely rich and focused collection, which specializes in Southern art, and really started putting it out there, organizing exhibitions, producing publications, really doing a fantastic job along with some of those other museums that Martha mentioned, like the Morris or the Ogden or Greenville County, really advocating for Southern art and trying to get it, a little bit more visible on not just the regional radar, but the national radar as well.
We're sorry, John and I, that we couldn't export the exhibition to a museum beyond the region. This was, I think, a casualty of the pandemic on various fronts. We were seeking partners in the West. I know John wrote to Portland, Oregon, and places up in New York, New Jersey. Museums were struggling at the time of the pandemic because their attendance was down, the future of their budgets was uncertain, and so we didn't accomplish what we had hoped to in terms of getting the exhibition seen beyond the region. But we're very grateful to the partners that we did have at the Georgia Museum of Art in Athens, which inaugurated the exhibition, then the Frist Museum in Nashville, and then the Dixon Gallery and Gardens in Memphis. And the reception has been very good all around. In fact, John, do you want to brag about the real coup we had? Yes. In terms of
well, it has been nice. I think before we do that, to what Martha was saying, we had to hope to get the show up and out of the South and the Southeast. And I think that's kind of the double-edged sword. Our project was intended to showcase the quality and raise the visibility of what was being made here. And it's certainly been very well received at the museums it's been at. But by the same token, when I'd talk to colleagues, we'd hear kind of repeatedly, I just don't know if this is really going to be of interest to our audiences, in the Pacific Northwest, in the Mid-Atlantic, in the Northeast. So that was kind of the stumbling block. But for people, we've talked to, I think if you look at the back cover of the book, we got great endorsements from people, eminent people in the field outside of the region. And perhaps the greatest publicity for it came in an article in the New York Times. Not an article that, we didn't invite the critic to come and see the show. He happened to have been in Atlanta looking for interesting shows to go see in the area and came across the show at Athens and decided to go up and see it. And so he went up to the Georgia Museum of Art and was so taken with the show that it received a full page review in the New York Times. And we didn't speak to the critic. He had didn't know kind of our intentions going in, but he picked up on just about everything I've said that, you know, this is an important show. Why don't we know more about this? Why isn't it being shown outside of the region? So we were thrilled to get that recognition kind of unsolicited.
Well, one of your endorsements, your blurb on the back from Sylvia Yount, who is the Lawrence Fleischman Curator in charge of the American wing at the Metropolitan Museum, and I'm quoting her now, "Whether rediscovering or encountering Southern modernism for the first time, readers of this valuable volume will find a welcome diversity of visual expressions, shaped, even haunted, by place and identity." Wow. Pats on the back.
We were pleased that Sylvia agreed to write about it. And I think for two reasons. One is that she's someone who has spent time in the South. She had been a curator at the High Museum and at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts before going up to the Met. So she certainly, you know, knew of some of these artists and the importance of the work from the region. But also, and you know, you quoted earlier on in our discussion, the 1949 assessment of Southern art from a curator at the Met. So it's nice to have a rejoinder to that on the back of our publication.
That's
why, 50 plus years later.
John, that's why I did it. So,
Martha, do you want to, for South Carolinians, do you know the opening date of the show at the Johnson Collection? Ours opens here in Charlotte, October 26th.
November 9th, 2024 to February 8th, 2025. And I'm pleased to say I looked at a draft of an article I've done for the American Art Review, which will come out this fall. And this too will give us some national publicity for both versions of Southern Modern.
They'll both be on view concurrently, both in Spartanburg and in Charlotte for a while, which will be nice. And I'll put in another plug. The Mint revitalized its long history of doing juried biennial and annual exhibitions of contemporary art from the South. And we will open our third recent iteration of this called Coined in the South in December. So there'll be contemporary art on view, a juried show from across the South at the same time as Southern Modern here.
Well, since COVID kind of messed up your plans to let everybody outside the South know what was going on, any follow-up in the next few years with another exhibition?
This one took 10 plus years to make.
Well,
let's see. I mean, I think a lot of the museums will still continue with their good work. I mean, my hope is that, you know, the visibility that these artists will gain will stimulate future things. You know, I have some projects coming up that focus on some of the artists in the show. So we are working on things like a retrospective of the work of John Biggers, who was a native of the Charlotte area, and also smaller shows on the work of Haywood Rivers, who is a North Carolina-born artist working mostly in the 60s and 70s and 80s, so a little after the period of Southern Modern. We're also thinking about a Big Bearden, Romar Bearden print retrospective. So yeah, I mean, lots more to come. Nothing on this on the kind of broad scale of Southern Modern, but definitely some more in-depth looks at some of the artists included in the show and others from the region.
And I can add something. It just coincidentally, I've been scrolling through the PDF of the book while we've been talking, and I have on my screen this wonderful image of Chimneys by Benjamin Wigfall. And the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts has just completed an exhibition of him in depth. So I think what's happening, Walter, is that there are individual, more monographic exhibitions in the works. But as John alluded, it took us 10 years plus to really get this out there. And I'm not going to live long enough to see a second version.
Martha, you did retire 14 and a half years ago. And as far as I know, you never really have retired. You keep having another project.
Right. That's right. I'm pleased to say that I'm working with the Johnson Collection on a regular basis, not just on this exhibition of Southern Modern, but they have me at work writing short bios for their website, which is this incredible tool on Southern artists. It really is amazing.
That's a fabulous resource. And I know that the Johnson Collection will continue to develop and tour more comprehensive overviews of different aspects of Southern art in the future. I know they're working away at some now that will come online in a year or two. you know, yes. These things do take time to develop. You know, Martha and I, as she said, we met with a large group in 2013. We kind of honed that group down to six or eight people as we continued to develop the project. And then once we had our initial checklist, again, we reached back out to colleagues in just about every state and region of the South, shared the checklist and said, you know, are we missing someone from your region? Because that was, you know, part of that journey of discovery and inclusivity. So, you know, doing that and then, you know, the process of putting the essays together, putting all the loan requests out, you know, these things don't happen overnight. So it's a big project, but I think it's important that every once in a while something like this comes along.
Well, this is not a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Martha, what is your favorite work of art that's depicted in the book?
You can't ask that. I mean, you can ask that question, but I'm not going to answer it.
John, can I ask you?
It's like asking a parent which is their favorite child. I mean, I get asked that every exhibition I do, and it's so hard. I mean, one of the things for the show that we wanted to do was not just to, you know, throw in works by a bunch of artists who are working in the South, but to really pick the best and to highlight, you know, the best examples of their work. So it's not like there's one masterpiece and a bunch of dogs in there. So again, it's so hard for me to pick. I mean, it's hard for me to even walk into one section of the show and pick my favorite work because, you know, we selected each of them because they speak to some, you know, particular subject or particular style. Like Martha said, it's hard to do. And like I said, it's like asking a parent with many children to pick their favorite.
And I'm sure you could hear it in his voice. There was a big grin on his face when he asked that question. So my provocateur friend here.
I get that question all the time. Who's your favorite person in history? Or who would you ask to dinner and all of that stuff?
Right.
In terms of the way you assemble the book, it is readable. And being a historian, you've got an incredible index. That's very, very important because if somebody just wanted to zero in on William H. Johnson or Anna Hayward Taylor, they can do that. I recommend everybody read it all the way through. Cover to cover. So,
yeah, that was something that Martha really, I think, put a lot of time into working on was that suggested readings. List at the end of the book because, as she said, you know, so many of these artists have had exhibitions at, you know, monographic exhibitions at smaller museums around the region, and you know, we wanted to kind of recognize the work that had been done. I mean, this show is really in some ways, you know, drawing all of that individualized knowledge together. So I think I was really happy that and grateful that Martha did so much work in pulling together those suggested readings.
Well, folks, Martha, Alfred's giving me the windmill sign, time for us to wind up. Any last words you'd like to say before we close out?
Oh, as usual, Walter, Alfred, it's been an honor to chat with you. I'm sorry that I'm not seeing you smiling and glinting your eyes. But I must say it's been an honor and a pleasure working with John, as well as our colleagues at the other museums. It's been a great experience all around.
All right. Okay. John, your turn.
Sure. And likewise to Martha and to you all at South Carolina Public Radio. I mean, it's great to have the opportunity to talk more about the show and to get the word out. And I'd really encourage people to come to the shows because there's, you know, you can look at works, pictures in a book, but there's nothing like seeing the works in person.
Well, Martha Severance and Jonathan Stallman, who have produced Southern Modern, Rediscovering Southern Art from the First Half of the 20th Century. I want to thank you both for being with us today on The Journal. I hope you enjoyed our conversation today, and I hope you learned something. I know that I did. In Southern Modern, Rediscovering Southern Art from the First Half of the 20th Century, Jonathan Stallman and Martha Severance have created a beautiful scholarly work
that would be a delight to read either as an introduction to modernism and Southern art or as a deeper dive for readers already familiar with its thriving presence in the South, until now something largely overlooked in histories of American art.
Walter Edgar's Journal is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. I'm Alfred Turner, and I produce the show, which is made possible by listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. Remember, the views and opinions expressed on Walter Edgar's Journal are not necessarily those of South Carolina Public Radio or its underwriters.
New episodes of Walter Edgar's Journal are published on the first and third Fridays of the month and are available at southcarolinapublicradio.org on the SCETV app, as well as from your favorite podcast provider. We'll talk again soon.